Elissa Walker Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker Campbell, welcome back this weekend to the Big E Sports Show. A very good weekend to all of you and happy holidays wherever you may be tuning in our program. As promised, we are continuing with our college football breakdown and bowl coverage. And joining us on the Western Company of Texas phone line is ESPN senior writer with ESPN The Magazine, Bruce Feldman. It's your first time on the show. Welcome aboard, Bruce.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be on with you.
Well, first things, at the forefront of our minds down here in Fort Worth is the TCU Horned Frogs as they prepare and get ready for the Rose Bowl. Talk about this particular matchup. What intrigues you the most with TCU and Wisconsin?
The thing that jumps out to me is Brett Bielema's program for Wisconsin, real physical. You know, right now I think it's the quintessential Big Ten program in terms of, you know, really good, talented, physical offensive line, three good running backs against Gary Patterson's defense. And I mean, that's been the fingerprint that he's had on building a powerhouse there in Texas has really been that defense. And you want to see, all right, this is a legitimate test. If he can slow the Badgers down, I think this will prove a lot to a lot of people who probably don't know that much about TCU. I mean, unlike Boise State, the Broncos have been on TV a lot on national TV, and TCU hasn't been on quite as much, and I think people know they're good. I just don't think they really know either how good or why they're good.
Well, Bruce, I'm glad you bring up, when you talk about TCU, their defense, because that is their forte. The nation's leader in total defense this season, and what's interesting is when you look and scout Wisconsin, I mean, this is a Badger team that averaged 67 points per game in its final three games. Coach Patterson, he does have a huge defensive challenge ahead of him, and he will be prepared.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a guy who I think people inside of the coaching world know how brilliant a defensive mind he is. I mean, not only scheme-wise, but in terms of assignment sound and getting things for game plan, having the players coached to be in the right place and do the right things, but also developing talent and having it fit the scheme that he does. I think that when you talk about great defensive coaches around the country, you know, a lot of people think defensive coordinators and they forget or they don't realize how, and you know, obviously I met you out at TCU practice, so we've been out there.
Yeah.
How hands-on. A lot of head coaches aren't like that once they have, you know, the keys in their hand and they're driving the whole deal. He's as hands-on as any head coach that I've seen run a practice and be involved, especially in his defense. And you know, we're going to see this is a good team they're going to face. This is a team that really played very well and blew out a lot of people down the stretch, you know, in the Badgers. And I think that, you know, it's a physical challenge for them, and I think that's a good thing to see.
Well, I'm looking forward certainly to the physicality, but you bring up a great point because you talk about Coach Patterson's practices. If you've ever been there, they're intense. They certainly are hands-on. And I think it's interesting, you know, ESPN's Craig James even talked about being out at the spring practices earlier this year and that it's almost NFL-like how he really has these guys, he gets the most out of them, but he has them prepared to take their game to the next level.
Yeah, I think there's so much has to be said for the way he motivates those kids and gets them, you know, keeps them motivated. Because I think I watched them, I was out at the game at Utah, and it looked like, you know, that was supposed to be two top 10 teams, and one team looked like a top 10 team, and the other team, which was a home team, just really was overwhelmed. And I think, you know, almost to the detriment, as good as a coach he is as a defensive guy, I think you kind of lose sight of, you know, some of the things they can do on offense. I mean, that day, I mean, people now know about Andy Dalton because he's been, you know, playing at a high level for, you know, a couple of years now, but the receivers are very good. And I think some of those other parts that kind of get lost in the shuffle because of it, I think you started to see more of that. And I think that, you know, having a head coach who is that active and that hands-on and demanding the attention to detail and the accountability, I mean, that permeates the whole team. And I think that's why you're seeing it, the way that things run the way they do.
Well, Bruce, I think what's been remarkable is just to see how Andy Dalton, yes, he is a four-year starter, but he has evolved just over the years. I mean, he's bigger, stronger, faster, and he's very smart. I mean, he is, you know, his ability to assimilate and to call the plays, I mean, he knows how to get it done, and he trusts himself, too.
Yeah, Yeah, you know, he was out here in California over the summer for the Elite 11 high school quarterback camp, where they have a lot of, you know, a handful of the top college quarterbacks work as counselors, and they interact with each other, but also with the high school kids. And the first night they're there, they you know, they address the room. Each guy goes in, and you know, he told his story. He was not a high profile recruit. Some of the kids who were counselors there, Ja'Cory Harris was one, Blaine Gabbert another at Missouri. Those guys were both, you know, had been Elite 11 kids when they were in high school. Andy Dalton was one of two guys really there who had proven to be something that a lot of the recruiting guys didn't think he would be, which was, you know, have the potential to be a big-time guy. And Kirk Cousins from Michigan State was the other one. You hear how humble they were and the perspective they had. I mean, this is, it's not an exact science in projecting what a 16 or 17-year-old is going to be like 4 or 5 years down the road, what the intangibles are going to be like, how hard they work, you know, their ability to lead a team. And you know, the maturity you see, I mean, I had a chance to catch up with them for just a second after the in Salt Lake City after the Utah game. The maturity that he seems to have, you know, it's got to be something that all the TCU people who were with him 3 years ago, 4 years ago, have to be really pleased to see that, okay, this is really the face of our program, and this is the kind of guy that the players not only look to in the huddle, but they're going to watch and see how he handles himself in all these public moments, because as a big-time quarterback, you're getting that, and he's going to get a lot of that going into, you know, as he comes out to L.A. for the Rose Bowl, and is front and center for a lot of these things in the week leading up to the game.
Andy Dalton, no doubt, a very special player, so appreciated by all the fans. Talk to us about, you know, both these teams, TCU and Wisconsin, having a significant layoff. I mean, I think of TCU, their last, you know, game was November 27th. Talk about the impact of having such a long layoff and how these coaches, they've got to maintain, you know, their swagger and keep these guys focused.
Yeah, that's a challenge, and I think that's why it's really hard to predict what happens in bowl season, because, you know, you're dealing with long layoffs, you're dealing with kids going through finals, you're dealing with a lot of distractions, and you also have, you know, time in the middle for teams to make, you know, significant scheme adjustments if need be, and to focus on the new opponent that they have. So that's what makes wild card, you know, bowl games such a wild card, I think.
Well, no teams have a longer layoff than Auburn and Oregon. They don't hit the field until January 10th. What are your keys to this particular game? Because, you know, Auburn, they're going to utilize the size and power of their quarterback, Cam Newton. He is unbelievable.
Yeah, the big challenge is for the Oregon defense. Now, they can't expect to stop Cam Newton, but they have to be able to contain him, cannot let him run wild. I think that's what's at issue for them. Not so much, you know, he did a lot of damage as a passer, and he leads the country in passing efficiency, but I don't think that's going to hurt him. Last year they played in the Rose Bowl. I think the Oregon defense was surprised by how sharp a passer Terrell Pryor was on them. I still think, though, some of the threat of him as a runner really creates a lot of openings for him as a passer, and I think if they can neutralize him, at least so he doesn't run wild, I think that's a huge advantage. I think both teams are going to score a lot of points. They're going to move the ball. I think ultimately it's going to come down to, you know, are there going to be some turnovers? Auburn gave Alabama chances to make plays and to really put the game away, and Alabama had some turnovers, and they also didn't capitalize when there were chances for interceptions and things like that. And I think if Oregon doesn't do that, I think Auburn could win the national title, and I think they could, you know, I don't say they were going to run away with the game, but I think it's going to be it would be really tough for Oregon if they can't take advantage of those mistakes.
Well, I want to talk some more about Oregon. I mean, Chip Kelly has done just a remarkable job as the head coach. Are you just amazed offensively what they were able to accomplish? And you talk about a team that can rack up points in a hurry. The Oregon Ducks are able to do that.
Yeah, it's so much of scheme with him, but it's really about how they execute. I mean, people are going to talk a lot about the tempo that he operates the system at and that they practice at, and those are all good things. But you talk to coaches who prepared against them, and they just say, you know what, they will run the same play over and over again. It's just the way things are designed there and the way they can operate it, you know, in the moment. That's the challenge. I mean, it's an emotional and a physical toll that it takes, and that's why they've blown games open a lot in the second half this year.
You're listening to the voice of Bruce Feldman. He is the senior writer at ESPN, ESPN the magazine. He has a book that is out. It's actually been on the market for a few years, but we do want to take time to highlight and talk about this. Of course, it's titled Meat Market. But before we do that, I do want to ask you, we're right here in the Big 12 Conference. Obviously, a little bit of a shakeup at the University of Texas. Their defensive coordinator, Will Muschamp, heading off to Florida. What was your reaction to the hiring of Will Muschamp? Kind of was a surprise hire, was it?
Especially given that he is a first-time head coach, and there were a lot of people who just assumed that it was going to, you know, by default, it would probably be Urban Meyer's former top assistant, Dan Mullen, who's done a nice job at Mississippi State, but that didn't happen. And now Will Muschamp, who, you know, I think a lot of people didn't realize that he had spent a big part of his childhood in Gainesville, and I think there was a connection there. I mean, on some sense, it makes a lot of sense when you look back at it. Here's a guy who knows the SEC very well, high-energy guy, talked to people who worked with him who say he's very organized, the players play hard for him. On those things, it makes a lot of sense. Now, let's see what happens. He says he wants to run a pro-style offense. That is very different from what Urban Meyer had won two national championships with there. You know, a lot's going to depend on who he can hire as his staff, because I think, and I've written a lot about this for ESPN.com of late, is when you get a first-time head coach, there's so many different factors. A lot of things sound great on paper. Almost every assistant you hear who is hired is supposedly a great recruiter. And I think those things help. But in terms of all the external things that go on with being a head coach are unique. And then if you don't have guys you can trust who are on the same page with what you want to do, both on the field, in the meeting rooms, and externally, you're going to have problems. So let's see you know, he hasn't really done much right now with assembling a staff or putting it forth. I think we'll get a better sense on how he's going to do once we see some of the hires he makes.
Okay, Will Muschamp, of course, spent time at Auburn and at LSU. Unproven as a head coach, but we'll just kind of have to wait and see. We are curious, you know, the Longhorn fans, there is a lot of uncertainty right now with Mac Brown, with, you know, just the type of season they had. And I even, you know, flipped the calendar back. You wrote a wonderful article about just the anticipation for Mac Brown. I mean, really was on a high, although that, you know, they had such a devastating injury to Colt McCoy in the national title game last year. But big expectations this season, and they fell way, way short.
They did, and I think a lot of it, you look back, I think they had major issues in terms of what their offensive identity was. You know, the offensive line was a big problem. I talked to some people who had, you know, covered the team early on, before really they started to start losing game after game, and the issue they said was they just thought something was missing up front, and then you started to see it. I don't think it was, you know, obviously you lost a great, great player in Colt McCoy. You lost, you know, his go-to receiver in Jordan Shipley and a lot of other, you know, solid pieces. But I think after a while, if you don't really have a great identity on what you're doing, especially on that, but also leadership internally, and I'm not talking necessarily about Mac Brown or even the coaches, but I think what you have from young players in the locker room, I'm not saying it's necessarily dissension, but chemistry and things like that, when things go bad, you know, who do you look to? Who rallies the team? I think you had that with a guy like Colt McCoy. I think you had, you know, it's putting a lot on guys who are, it's tough to lead for the first time, and I think some of that has happened. I think this is just going to be a blip and a kind of a flukish thing that I don't expect them to be anywhere near under 8 wins or 9 wins again anytime soon. I think they'll respond. I know he's got to make a lot of coaching adjustments and staff changes, but just Mac Brown's track record, he is a proven leader, and I think that there's still a lot of talent there. It's Texas. So, you know, I think this was a jolt of reality for a lot of people, and I think it forced Mac Brown and the people at UT to make some very, very hard decisions, but I think they'll be fine moving forward.
Hard decisions, not easy. We'll have to wait and see how things go even during the spring. Bruce Feldman has been with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Let's take time to close out our interview and highlight your book that was actually released 3 years ago. You're the author. It is titled Meat Market, Inside the Smash Mouth World of College Football Recruiting. All I have to say is, you know, Bruce, you have covered college football for so many years. What surprised you the most when you were chronicling and putting this book together?
You know, the biggest thing really was finding out how much the academic side of things is that part of things, and how much, I don't want to say deception, but you know, there's a lot of dubious things that go on in the, you know, kids are saying that, okay, I'm 6'2", 225 pounds, and I run a 4'5", 40, and that's what you see on their profile on the internet recruiting sites. Well, the schools, until they see that kid or until he shows up at their camp or they scout him, they don't know. I mean, they also, you see a kid who says he has a 2.6 GPA, and that, you know, this, all the fans think, okay, you know, he's qualified. Why, you know, why are we not pursuing this kid? And then when the transcript shows up, you know, they find out he has like 5 core classes, and his GPA isn't a 2.6; it's like a 1.5 in core classes. And
wow,
his GCT is not good.
And gosh,
all those parts are very hard for people to get a sense of unless you're in the football office. I mean, I was fortunate enough to have been a fly on the wall for a full year and inside the SEC, inside an SEC war room, and just to see the details of what goes into the evaluation process, but all the other parts of it, because it's really easy once you see it to get a better sense of why some of these 4- and 5-star guys turn out to be busts and why some of these 2- and 3-star guys end up being All-Americans.
Bruce, do you talk about, I mean, I know you provide a lot of nuggets and insight on what the players go through in terms of the recruiting process, but what about the coaches, you know, the demands of recruiting, the overwhelming pressure? As you had just said, you were that fly on the wall for an entire year, and having that access, I mean, that had to be huge.
Yeah, I mean, the thing to me was it was such a roller coaster ride. I mean, I was with this coaching staff at Ole Miss for a whole year, and so you see every part of the roller coaster ride. And you know, it's not really so much a book about Ole Miss as it is really the process. I mean, they chased after, you know, one blue chipper after another, and the best chance they got were on some of the kids they were on first and earliest, and those kids who turned out to be big deal guys. Some, you know, Drake Nevis was a kid a lot of the listeners will remember. He turned out to be an All-American this year at LSU. When Ole Miss got a commitment from him, he was an under-the-radar kid. Well, you know, they stuck with him and stuck with him. Well, towards the end of the process, he's a Louisiana kid. LSU came in on him. LSU got him to switch his commitment. Then all of a sudden, voila, he goes from a 3-star kid to a 4-star kid basically overnight, and he turned out to be a big star. And you see the toll that, you know, not just on the recruiters themselves, but also on, you know, their families who know their, you know, their husbands or their dads are so invested in these kids who really are unproven. You're projecting what they might be like. Some of these kids might not even get into school. And to see, okay, this kid's going to come here, or he's not going to sign with us. And the coaches can be devastated by the outcomes of whether a kid decides to put on a hat, the right hat, at one of the in front of some podium on, you know, the first Wednesday in February. It's a crazy, crazy process.
Bruce Feldman has been with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. Of course, the book we were just highlighting, it is a compelling read. It is titled Meat Market: Inside the Smash Mouth World of College Football Recruiting. I'm sure you can go anywhere, Google it online. You can pick up a copy of that. And Bruce, we look forward to having you back on our program. Thank you so much for taking time, and happy holidays and happy new year.
Same to you. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.